AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. And as usual on Tuesdays, we have a conversation with the writer at the Minnesota Reformer, sometimes Patrick Coolican, sometimes Max Nesterak. And today we are with Max Nesterak of the Minnesota Reformer as we are going to be talking through a few of the stories that they've been working on over at the Reformer website, MinnesotaReformer.com. Max, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So the main story I'd like to talk to you about is the fact that, well, union nurses and six Twin Cities and Duluth area health systems have reached an agreement to avoid a strike, as a number of hospitals around Minnesota have announced a tentative agreement starting last night and a little bit this morning with the nurses union, possibly averting a strike, which was something that both sides definitely wanted to avoid. So, Max, tell us a little bit about what's in this new agreement, or at least tentative agreement, between management and the nurses union.
Yeah, so this is a really big deal because 15,000 nurses across the state were threatening to go on strike on December 11th through the end of the month. Nurses in Duluth at St. Luke's actually said they would strike without end, and they would strike until there were a deal. And so it's actually nurses at seven of the state's largest health systems. This morning, we hadn't heard from Essentia Health. Later on, we heard that they had also reached a deal. And so this deal includes the largest pay increase for nurses in two decades, since 2001. Nurses in the Twin Cities will receive 18% wage increase over the next 3 years. And nurses at St. Luke's and Duluth will receive a 17% increase over the next 3 years.
So I'm also curious about this new agreement in terms of what it's doing for staffing levels at these hospitals, since I know that was a main point of contention by the nurses, being very concerned about staffing levels and having nurses being overworked. Did this new agreement do anything to address those issues?
Yes, it did. And this has been a major sticking point and part of the reason why negotiations have dragged on for 9 months. Nurses say staffing is dangerously low, and this is in no small part a problem of management, and that managers are deciding to understaff units, and that's leading to nurses to burn out and leave, and then that further exacerbates the staffing shortage problem. So nurses want a greater say in staffing levels at the hospitals. And so far, this has been a non-starter for hospitals because hospital leaders say, that's a management decision. That's something that we need to make, and we can't cede that authority to the nurses union. They were able to make an agreement, and that includes that they won't reduce current staffing levels without quote, consensus between nurses and management, between a group of nurses and managers. It also gives nurses protection from discipline when they raise concerns about assignments that they think are unsafe. And it requires hospitals to review staffing levels if negative outcomes for patients and nurses rise by 50%.
So what led to some headway being made on a deal? Was it just simply that deadline of December 11th coming up? Was it urgency with the flu season? I'm curious what led to really get the wheels going and an agreement being reached between both sides. Have we heard anything in that respect?
They haven't given much. I think the threat of the strike has really loomed large here, and this comes before hospitals were about to have to pony up a lot of money to bring in to sign contracts to secure replacement nurses during a strike. So they were able to avoid some of those costs, and just coming up on the holiday to have a strike, especially when hospitals are already beleaguered with RSV and COVID-19 and the flu. And of course, nurses don't want to be on strike on Christmas, or how are you going to buy Christmas presents or holiday presents if you're not getting a paycheck for 3 weeks. So I think a strike was something that everybody wanted to avoid, and definitely helped them cross the finish line here.
What's been the reaction from both sides, from hospital management and the unions? Do they both seem relatively happy with the agreement, or are they kind of looking things saying, well, I wish we could have gotten more in this deal? I'm curious how both sides are reacting.
you know, both sides are celebrating this, and I think that's pretty typical. They both, you know, they reached this agreement. The nurses still have to ratify it. They have to vote and approve these contracts. So they're both touting their own success here. And the Minnesota Nurses Association president, Mary Turner, said it's a historic win for nurses. And she said the agreements will help keep nurses at the bedside. And she says they'll keep continuing to fight to oppose corporate, what she calls corporate healthcare policies that threaten hospital systems and the care of patients. On the other side, Allina Health shared a statement saying they're pleased with the settlement and it reflects the priorities both of the hospitals and the nurses and is fair and equitable.
Well, you can read more about the agreement that Max wrote over at MinnesotaReformer.com. MinnesotaReformer.com, as I'm guessing, will be getting more details coming in as the agreement does get finalized. But so far, we do have a tentative agreement between six Twin Cities area hospitals and a Duluth area health system and union nurses to avoid a strike, which could have happened later this month. One other piece of news I wanted to talk to you about has to do with police and firefighter pensions, because their pension fund could be significantly underfunded as the exodus continues of a number of police officers, especially in Minneapolis, because that has been a trend for the past few years. So, Max, I'm curious, talk us through what exactly is the state of that current pension fund for firefighters and police officers, because as I was mentioning, it's severely underfunded. So I'm a little curious what the state is and why is it in such poor shape?
Yeah, so my colleague Dina Winter has really been covering this story since we've seen a surge in retirements and disability claims from police officers, particularly in the wake of George Floyd's murder in 2020. As of August, about 180 disability retirement claims have been filed, compared to 307 last year and 241 in 2020. And 90% of these disability claims are made by police officers, with about a third of them coming from Minneapolis. And so with all of these disability claims, that means the Public Employees Retirement Association retirement plan is severely underfunded by as much as $1 billion as this exodus continues from primarily police departments.
Yeah, and that's what I was curious about, is if this is more on the police officer's end or the firefighter's end. And it sounds like this is more police officers exiting the profession, mostly because, the aftermath of the George Floyd murder and a lot of them, leaving the profession. So this is mostly on the police officer side, correct?
That's right, and most of it is due to people claiming post-traumatic stress disorder, and because of a state law, there's a presumption that if you are diagnosed with PTSD, you've incurred that on the job if you're a police officer or a first responder. And so all of those claims have increased the fund's liability by $73 million this year. So they're projecting that the plan could be underfunded by about $1 billion, and that could require an increase in contributions by about 4%. Now, that could come from, you know, the employers or the employees or a mix of both. But as Dina reported today, you know, after a push to shore up this pension fund, employees have already had the highest contribution rate in the plan's history at 11.8% of their pay, while employers contribute 17.7%. So for folks out there with their own retirement plan, a 401k, that sounds like a large employer contribution rate, 17.7%, and it is. So, but again, that could go up even higher.
So that's where I was going to go next in terms of how they're going to try to replenish this fund. Now, being that they are police officers and firefighters, public employees, I'm assuming this is something that wouldn't be given to the taxpayers to try to shore up this fund, at least at the state legislature, correct? This would mostly come through, increased funding from the employees themselves, correct?
Well, yeah, but it could also come from the employers. So it could be a split cost.
Gotcha.
So if this 4% increase, correct, yeah, so it could require cities to have to pony up more to pay into this plan. And I'll just note that under the Public Employees Retirement Association plan, workers who retire early due to disability get 60% of their salary tax-free for 5 years or until they turn 55. when it converts to a regular retirement, and their employer must continue paying for their health insurance until they turn 65 when they're eligible for Medicare. So these are generous benefits compared to workers who are not public employees.
Well, we'll have to see how this plays out because, as you said, if their employer contributions go up, that could have an impact on taxpayers throughout Minnesota. So certainly something worth following along with the Minnesota – with the police officers and firefighters and their pension fund being severely underfunded. You can read more about Dena Winter's piece over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Again, make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com. We have been speaking with Max Nesterak. He is with the Minnesota Reformer. Max, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Always happy to come on.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.